all of us, we are taking on the role of representatives of God or representatives of religion. And such people are so much respected by the innocent masses, because the innocent masses cannot understand the scriptures directly. So naturally they depend on the sadhus and sons and fathers and such people in order to understand the principles of religion. And they see them and they put faith in them. And they develop faith in them. Many times they are very innocent in dealing with sadhus. Many times. So what we offer the people is very important. We are taking on the role of brahmacharis, celibates, and so much of resources are being spent on us and grooming us and developing us into representatives of religion. And many organizations do that. Not only ISKCON, there are so many religions and so many organizations which do that. But we have to see what is the kind of ultimate achievement and the state of heart or state of consciousness that our religious practice is grooming us into. Ideally speaking, any religion, two principles of religion teach that a person should be brought to a particular state of consciousness where he feels humble, simple, he accepts God as a supreme and understands the eternal service to the Lord as the ultimate achievement. And such aspiration is free from any desire for sense gratification, any desire for name, fame, position, power, domination over others. So that is the ultimate principle of religion. So I was hearing in one of the lectures of Maharaj a very interesting explanation about how in the modern times, he was giving a very vivid explanation about different religions and about our current practicing our religion of Krishna consciousness. So he was telling there how there is a new age religion, as we call it. There are so many new age gurus who have come now, who teach people that actually you don't have to follow all the religious practices because they are very rigid and they are very troublesome and too many do's and too many don'ts and all these things. You just, be nice, be good, do good, feel nice, feel good about yourself, feel good about others. This kind of new age religions are being floated. Actually those people who speak such religions, they become very famous gurus. They also wear the dress of saffron and they travel worldwide and they have millions of followers, such gurus. And they don't teach people to give up sinful habits. Such people eat meat, drink wine, everything they do. So Maharaj was telling how it's very much possible simply by wearing the dress of a mendicant and speaking something connected to religion, actually one doesn't become a religionist by that, or one doesn't become a sadhu by that. So in the new age religion also includes, there are many seminars that we give, like on stress management, or yesterday I was speaking on leadership, for example, for the public. We sometimes use it as a tool to attract the public to come to God. But if this becomes our mainstream preaching, then we would become cheaters, undoubtedly. We will be cheating the people by giving them what is not ultimate religion. Ultimate religion doesn't say that you just do some yogasanas, do some pranayama, do some breathing exercises and you will become all right and your life will be happy. That's not ultimate religion at all. In fact, Prabhupada condemned one born Maharaj in those days, for teaching some yogasana exercises and all. So in the modern times, there are so many modern age gurus who have come, who teach people that if you do some soham exercise or some yogasana exercise, and you know, always be cheerful, think positive, don't think anything negative, don't become bound by some rituals, rites, some particular rules of the religion. Be good to all, be good to everyone, be happy always. There are people like that. So these lines are being floated. And even if you come to the people who are actually practicing religion, this is actually not religion only, the first one what we were talking. This is practically sense gratification which is presented in the form of religion. So such people actually do all kinds of things. They only look like religionists, but they have no religion. But even if you take the actual religionists, for example, there are people who are Jains who say they are followers of Rishabhadev. But if you see Rishabhadev, his teaching is 100 sons. Nayam deho dehabhajandu loke kashtan kamana harate vidubhujamye tapo divyam. He said you should do divya tapa, divine austerities. If you talk about austerities in the modern times, you will become unpopular. Nobody likes to talk about tapasya or giving up sense gratification. In fact, Rishabhadev is one of the prominent sons, Bharat Maharaj. He left everything and he went to forest. And in order to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is the teaching of Rishabhadev that led him to, you know, sacrifice everything ultimately for the pleasure of the Supreme. You see that. But that is not being emphasized at all. If you see in such religions may be promoting some social welfare, but they don't talk about surrendering to the Supreme and working for the pleasure of the Supreme. You don't find that. You know, nowadays even Buddhists, they eat meat and all kinds of things. There was one Buddhist monk who was traveling in a plane. So when they came and asked, when air hostess came and asked him, what would you like to have, veg or non-veg? So he chose non-veg. So there was another Wisconsin as sitting next to him. So he asked, sir, you are a Buddhist, you are a follower of Buddha. Buddha came to teach non-violence. How can you eat non-veg? Frankly asked him. So he said, we are bhikkhus, bhikshus. So we accept whatever is given. We don't, deny. Whatever is sent by God, arranged, we accept. But then this ISKCON senior asked him, but it is not given by God to you. You made the choice. You were given the choice, veg or non-veg, and you chose to eat non-veg. Then why do you put the blame on God? Then that Buddhist mendicant became angry, just turned aside. And after that, till the whole journey, he never turned towards this sannyasi at all. So, this is the way people are practicing religion in the modern times, you are telling. Now, if you take Islam, for example, there are majority of the people who groom their followers saying that you have to participate in the holy war, where you kill the people of other religions, you kill the cows, kill the goats, kill animals. Such religions are awakening envy, hatred, power, pride, and such options in the heart of people. So it is making people cruelsome and become barbaric towards other innocent people of the world. Is that the purpose of religion? If you take Christianity, for example, in Christianity nowadays, there are people like Jehovah Witnesses, and there are people like that. They are all very prominent. They have watchtower, they distribute 1,25,000 magazines or something. In millions they distribute. 20 million issues, 25 million, 25 crores, is it? Yeah, they printed 25 crores. They are very, very big in the whole world, if you see. So there are many groups among Christians also. There are Roman Catholics, there are Protestants and different groups. But if you see the central theme, of many other groups, you find even after taking to religion, still watching TV, drinking wine, eating meat, all kinds of sense gratification goes on in the name of religion. They say they worship God, but actually, if you find there is no religious principle left there. So he was talking about different religious people, different sections of our society, where even people become mendicants or so-called brethren or sadhus and things like that. But their central life is centered around sense gratification. Yes, sir. If you take the Hindus, even if you take the Hinduism as it exists today, many people say Hinduism means it's a way of life. You can have your own way of life. Whatever you interpret about God and soul and life and everything, that is all right. All over India you will find that. All over the world. That's why when Prabhupada went to the West, he found that Bhagavad Gita commentaries are being written. But they don't actually talk about anything about the content of Bhagavad Gita at all. The author writes his own commentary of what he thinks about Hinduism. All bogus conceptions. And they have formed organizations, they have collected money from people. There are, even in the time of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there were people in Navadvip Dham who were so-called brahmanas, recitors of Vedic mantras. They were very falsely proud and arrogant. And they considered devotees to be enemies. They did not like the simplicity and the humility of devotees. They hated devotees. So they were reading Vedic scriptures, but the recitation of the Vedic mantras did not produce the desired effect what the ultimate religion is supposed to produce in their hearts. Like even to the extent of Devanand Pandit, for example, who was a reciter of Srimad Bhagavatam itself. Somebody may say Srimad Bhagavatam is the conclusion of all religion. But he was giving an interpretation which was totally on an intellectual platform, which had absolutely no substance of devotion at all. He didn't talk about surrendering to the Supreme and participating in the eternal service to the Supreme. That was not the main emphasis. In Mahaprabhu's times, before Mahaprabhu appeared, there were, you know, Bhattacharyas, so many kinds of Brahmanas, Trivedi, Dvivedi, Chaturvedi, and all of them. They were all speaking about the Vedic literature, but they were actually not at all touching the essential principle of religion. So, why we are talking about this now? The religion may take different shapes in different places, in different times, in the lives of different people. So we have to know, we are also religionists, we are also bhikshus or mendicants or sadhus. What are our faiths? What are we rooted on? And what do we offer people? That is very, very important in the life of a sadhu or a devotee. So what we practice in our Krishna consciousness should eventually bring our heart to a state of consciousness where the central theme is this. The Supreme Lord Krishna is the central theme. And service to Him with love, devotion and humility is the central theme. And naturally, the Lord loves His devotees, and service to devotees in a humble state of attitude is the ultimate principle of religion. You know this verse, famous verse, it says, Dharmasya tattvam nihitam guhayam. So although the scriptures are available, it is very difficult for us to ascertain the religious principles on our own, by our own endeavors. It's very difficult. So we have to see the lives of pure souls and great souls. And that is how Srila Prabhupada attracted people to take to Krishna consciousness when he went to the West. When we are practicing religion, we have to be careful that we don't misrepresent the religion of Krishna consciousness. Like even Prabhupada was misrepresented by many people. Like one time, this example was told to Bhavanand Prabhu himself, who is disciple of Prabhupada. Some disciples of Prabhupada worldwide, they started arguing, Prabhupada has written a letter saying that, all of you come to Mayapur and you can retire here and we will take care of you. Prabhupada wrote like that in one letter, and then he people quoted that letter. They were saying, Prabhupada said, so we are coming to Mayapur and it is duty of ISKCON to give us prasad, give us accommodation and take care of us, and we are planning to live there, that's all, without doing anything. So they were quoting that letter. So Bhanand was telling where these sentences come from. So when he was in Calcutta temple, they were actually not able to run the Calcutta temple, they had some problem. So that time Prabhupada wrote a sarcastic letter to them saying that, okay, you don't want to take the trouble to run the Calcutta temple, okay, you wind up everything there. And he said, simply you all come here to Mayapur and you come and stay here and we will take care of you. Prabhupada wrote sarcastically. So people took that letter and quoted that Prabhupada said, you come to Mayapur, stay here and we will take care of you. So how writings of someone can be misinterpreted, you can see. So even within ISKCON there are splinter groups of people like Ritvikism, which is actually arising from fanaticism. There are Gopi Bhav clubs. So there are many groups of people even within our society. Then how can we know what is the true religion? We may think that if I have come to ISKCON, that's the last, now full stop in my endeavor to understand God. But even after coming to a society like this, still we can be bewildered by fanatics who just take to one side of the true religion and not give the broad understanding of religion. So, it's very important that as we live as mendicants, we understand the core of religion. If each of us ask a question to ourselves, what is the impetus for me that made me join this ISKCON movement? And what gives me the driving force in continuing in this society? You will see that, of course, not only the question of how you came in. Somebody may say, I like prasadam, I came. No. But even after spending a few years, if you carefully observe what is giving me the driving force, it's likely to be some subtle material reason. For example, some people say, I like morality. Here people are very moral, they are nice, they are well behaved. Or some people, there are many people even from abroad who joined our organization because they liked the Indian culture. Like some women liked wearing sari, some men liked wearing dhoti kurta. They were frustrated with the Western culture and they liked Indian culture. So they took to our society. Some people joined our society because they had some appreciation for the Eastern wisdom on yoga, yogasanas, or doing yogic exercises and things like that. And there are some people who developed attraction to our society because they liked some kind of rituals and rites, some mantras. So some people joined our society and started learning Sanskrit and, you know, they got into that. So different people actually come for different reasons. Even all of us have come for different reasons. If we carefully observe what inspired me to join this organization. And even now, over the years, what inspires me to continue in the organization. It can be less noble reasons. It can be less noble reason, or it can be even if it is apparently some reason connected to some religion, connected to some religious principle. It may not be the core of what Krishna consciousness offers. So then, what are we to do? First of all, we have to understand what is core Krishna consciousness. And then we have to see where am I standing. And if I am standing outside of it, then we have to bring ourselves towards the core. And if we don't do that, in the long run, we may be thinking we are practicing some kind of religion or we are offering some kind of religion, but we may not be actually doing justice to our lives and to the lives of other people. So this is very important. So sometimes people become inspired by these kind of fringe fields which I am saying, and they may be very much into that, totally into that. For example, these three paths of karma, jnana and yoga, they have different emphasis. Karma emphasizes on rituals and rules and rites. strictly following them. And yoga has got a lot to do with tapasya or austerity. And jnana talks a lot about intellectual analysis and evaluation and all that. It has got to do with intellect. So, going into only one of these zones and not understanding the core can actually, in the long run, not transform our state of heart, state of consciousness, to the desired state which we were talking in the beginning. Can happen like that. If you see, if you read Srila Prabhupada's books, you'll understand the core wisdom that is being spoken in Prabhupada's books is the central theme is Krishna, the personality of Godhead, Supreme Personality of Godhead, for the six opulences. It is very important that in our private lives, in our own hearts, we develop a very firm faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, with his six opulences, and for his pastimes, his activities, his nature, his characteristics, his qualities, his dealings with his devotees. This is very, very vital. It's very important. Like the other day, I was speaking on this pastime of Akrura coming and taking Krishna Balaram away from Vrindavan. So there is a beautiful verse we were reciting in that connection. Evam bruvanam
vyarahatura
chetasam. It's about the gopis who are, it is said, Vrajastriya Krishna Vishakta Manasa. Vrajastriya are the Vrindavan gopis. Krishna Vishakta Manasa means they are firmly, their minds were attached to Krishna. And then it says, Visrijya Lajjam Rurudusma Susmaran Govinda Damodara Madhaveti. It says, Visrijya Lajjam, giving away all the lajja or the shyness. Why they have to give up shyness? Because many of the gopis were lovers of Krishna, but it was not known to all the Vrajabasis. But now that Krishna was going away, they all came in front of the cart and they were loudly calling Krishna's names and weeping in the public without any shyness, because now that the Lord of the life is going out of Vrindavan, now they thought, what is the they didn't think there is no use holding any more secrets. So Visrijjala Jam Rurudusma Susmaran Govinda Damodara Madhaveti. So in this way, different holy names of Krishna they were singing. So if you read a Krishna book or if you read this kind of pastimes, you come to understand that actually the core thing that Prabhupada wants to offer in all his books, all his teachings, is he wants us to develop loving attraction for Krishna. As Prabhupada said also, many devotees were asking Prabhupada, what pleases you the most? Is it book distribution? Is it deity worship? Is it preaching? Isn't it? Is it farm community, or is it Gurukul? And Prabhupada never said any one of those things. What did he say? I want you to develop love for Krishna, he said. Of course, love for Krishna cannot be developed by memorizing verses or by reciting Srimad Bhagavatam. Many people have done it alone. So, by living in the company of devotees who have some faith in Krishna and who are developing their faith in Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead. And also who are living a life in accordance to the teachings of Srila Prabhupada, and also giving up sense gratification systematically, and only accepting what is absolutely needed for one's keeping body and soul together, and aiming at this and gradually applying in their hearts, in their minds, and cultivating their hearts and minds in such a way that this state of consciousness, what Prabhupada is talking in Krishna book, will be eventually achieved. In every pastime you will see, whether it is Akrura or whether it is gopis meditating on Krishna, in every pastime, whether Krishna is entering Mathura, the emphasis given by Srila Prabhupada is how the devotees served Krishna, what was their consciousness, how they did not want anything material, how they did not want siddhis, or they didn't want heaven, and they didn't want even liberation. They simply wanted to love Krishna and serve him. That's the central thing. So now for many of us, see, I'm not talking about the conscious state. In an unconscious state, or in a state where you are not giving lecture, normal state, our attraction or our faith may be in many things, many different things. It may not be exactly in Krishna. Most of us actually ever attract, in Prabhupada's time, many people developed a very strong fondness for Prabhupada. Wherever Prabhupada went, they went with Prabhupada. They were always hearing lectures of Prabhupada. Some of them were very moneyed people. they were millionaires. So wherever Prabhupada traveled, they were also traveling with Prabhupada. They simply wanted to see the smile of Prabhupada, speaking of Prabhupada. They didn't do much many times. They were simply with Prabhupada. So Prabhupada didn't like them. Prabhupada wanted them to do some service. Somehow they had developed a very strong sentimental attachment to Prabhupada. But then, when Prabhupada left the planet and went back to Godhead, they also left Krishna consciousness. Because they didn't actually understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness properly. And they went away. They never came back, many of them. See, the scriptures appreciate developing attachment to a sadhu. Saeva sadhu shukrito mokshadvaram apavrata. So then why then developing attachment to Prabhupada did not allow them to continue the path of Krishna consciousness? The reason is simple. The Shastras say when you develop attachment to a sadhu, naturally you also will oblige to his instructions. And also his taste will also become your taste. Like Prabhupada, how Prabhupada's followers became Krishna's devotees. Because when you love a person, you also do what he tells you to do, and you also develop liking according to his liking and everything. And gradually your system becomes transformed. Over a period of time, that person exactly makes you like him only. Prahlad Maharaj says, Kritvatmasat Surarishina Bhagavan Grihita Soham Katamna Visrije Tavabritya Seva. He says, my spiritual master, Narada Muni, he offered me the wisdom of Paro Bhakti or Bhagavata Dharma, by which Kritvatma Sat, he says, he made me exactly like him, he says. Prahlad says, he made me exactly like a pure devotee, like himself. Kritvatma Sat, Surarishina, Bhagavan Grihita, by picking me up from the blind well of darkness of this material world, he made me exactly like himself. So, our composition, our substance in our heart should exactly become like our acharyas, who had developed a very firm attachment for Krishna and a firm attachment for service to Krishna, and understanding that as the mainstream path of Krishna consciousness, and all other things to be superficial. And this is one of the duties of an acharya, to clearly explain what is the core and what is the covering. There are many things which look like religion, which are actually not religion. And offering a stress management seminar, it has no connection to religion. You give a whole seminar on stress management and you say, now you chant Hariksha Mantra at the end. Actually, it doesn't have any connection. Sometimes, Grihastas can do a 2-day seminar or a 3-day seminar on such topics, because they are anyway into the soup of the material world. Instead of only doing the material things for the material companies, if they do such things which are like a bridging activity between them, between the outside world and the devotional world, it may be all right. But as devotees, we should cultivate knowledge about Krishna, about devotion to Krishna thoroughly, and we should ourselves develop firm faith in it first. Because if we don't have faith, we cannot give faith to anybody. Unless you feel Krishna consciousness, you cannot give the feeling of Krishna consciousness to anybody. It's not possible. So, Narayan Swami writes this in one of his books I was reading. So, many times people talk on many, many topics, even within the purview of Krishna consciousness, which actually don't bring people to this core consciousness. When you talk of religion, there are so many things. You can talk of the mind. You can talk of importance of sadhu sangha, you can talk of karma, jnana, yoga, connected topics. There are millions of topics. And we all have different tastes also. And according to that we may speak also. But if we don't again come to this central theme of Krishna and developing faith, affection and service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then we are actually not giving the right thing what Prabhupada gave. That is why my request to all of you as preachers is you should hear Prabhupada's lectures regularly. Now we have this new system of sadhana card. We should learn to speak in simple language like Prabhupada. Prabhupada's language is very, very simple. It's extremely simple. And he doesn't complicate anything. He just presents it down to the core. You know, the kind of explanation that Prabhupada gives to scriptures, nobody will be left with any trace of doubt about anything. Sometimes when we speak lectures, people say, did you intend to say that or did you intend to say this? People ask. But in Prabhupada's lectures, there is no question of worrying about what is his intention. It is very straightforward. Simply straightforward. So, being the founder acharya for society, he has given in his books as well as in his lectures very straightforward knowledge of how the Vrajavasis had developed a very firm faith in Krishna. And Prabhupada's writings clearly show us that he wants his followers to develop such a firm faith in Krishna. For those who are born in India, it's not very difficult to have some knowledge of Krishna. Even we all know, even in our childhood we have heard so many stories of Krishna. But what is most important here is the faith in Krishna. See, there are two aspects, knowledge and faith. You have to have some knowledge first of all, and then whether you believe in that knowledge, what you have heard. Depending on the development of our faith in this Supreme Personality, to that degree, one becomes a Kanishtha Adhikari or a Madhyama Adhikari, Uttama Adhikari. You will see that the categorization is done based on what? Faith. Knowledge and faith. First you have to assimilate knowledge based on Prabhupada's purports. But you will see that even after you acquire knowledge, your heart is not devoid of doubts. Your heart may still feel that, is Lord really completely fair in His dealings? Is He equal to all? I am just telling different doubts that may arise in a person's mind. Is He really fair? Sometimes He appears to be leaning towards devotees and demigods. Sometimes He seems to be envious towards demons, like Shishupal. So this is one doubt that may arise in a person's mind. Or one may even be doubtful about Krishna's dealings with His devotees, namely the gopis or the queens of Dwaraka. Krishna's dealings and Krishna's activities that apparently seem to be immoral in many situations and cases. Our mind may feel that just because He is Supreme Personality of Godhead, why should the Lord do such things? So, actually it's not a very easy thing to develop a very firm faith in Krishna. The first faith we develop in devotees. That is why devotees have to be extremely fair in dealings. They should never be unreasonable in dealings. And devotees have to be extremely exemplary and noble in their qualities, in their character, in their integrity, in keeping the word, and in their purity. So, the followers of devotees, when they see the devotees spotless in character, then they develop faith that, yes, Krishna must be really good. Otherwise, how can a devotee be so good? That is how they develop faith. If a devotee can be so spotless, so innocent, and so pure, then Krishna must also be pure. Because this devotee has so much faith in Krishna. That is how people develop faith in Krishna, by seeing the lives of devotees. So, first one develops faith in a devotee, and then enter service to a devotee, and gradually that should get translated into faith in Krishna and service to Krishna. Of course, when we serve Krishna, service to devotee never stops. Like Prahlad Maharaj asked, Soham katam na visarje davabhritya seva. My dear Lord, now I have seen your darshan now. And he said, what can I ask you other than service to your pure devotee, Narada? He asked. I will not ask for anything else. He said, I am satisfied in the service to your devotee because he has given me this eyes to see your glory. So like that Prahlad Maharaj says. So, as we spend years, you know, in the ISKCON society, I am again telling you, repeating this point, not just reading Krishna book during prasadam or speaking about Krishna as we have to speak, because I am ISKCON person, I am ISKCON brahmachari, and I have to speak from Prabhupada's book. Okay, I have to read something and tell people about that, you know, something about Krishna. So we may speak as Prabhupada talks about official meditator. In official meditator, Prabhupada says, you read that verse, Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto Madhyajima Namaskuru. In that purport, Prabhupada writes, one should not become an official visitor, official visitor to the temple, isn't it? That is coming in third chapter, but this is coming in the Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto purport. Prabhupada says, Chalita meditator is different. Chalita meditator is a cheater. He is a Mithyachari. Whereas here, Prabhupada is talking about a devotee. Somebody is a devotee in Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto, he says one should not become an official visitor to the temple. So there are many people who come as official visitors to the temple. Similarly, as brahmacharis, we may be living in ISKCON, we may be reading books, may be preaching, but where is our faith lying? What is our knowledge and what faith do we have in that knowledge? Because coming to the chanting of the holy name, once Devamrit Prabhu was telling about chanting of the holy name, that one has to chant his holy names personally, he was telling, treating Radha and Krishna as persons. So it was a very deep sentence. Then I met him personally and asked him, so you tell me how to treat the Lord personally. So then we had a talk and he explained many nice things. So in order for us to treat Krishna personally, the pastimes of Krishna that you hear in Krishna book or the knowledge of Krishna that you acquire from Prabhupada books, this should not be something foreign to your system. For example, there are so many things that are happening in the world which doesn't influence you or affect you. There is America-Iran war going on. Does it affect you anyway? Any of you become affected by that? Like in India, there is an election going on. Choosing, you know, somebody to become prime minister or something. Does it affect you in any way? It doesn't affect you or influence you. So that means we are not affected by those things. They have no relevance to us. Similarly, the knowledge we acquire from Prabhupada's books is not for reading and holding in the memory and repeating as official preachers. I will come to that point. I will cover that point also. I was just coming to that point. So we are not supposed to just read, hold the things in the memory, and then communicate to people what we have heard. But also this knowledge should sink into our hearts, and we should develop faith. Now, what is the meaning of that? For example, as we chant the holy name and spend our time and years in the society, gradually we should, some of the things that should happen in our heart is a firm faith in Krishna, that Krishna is fair. As I was telling you the points before, Lord is like a personification of love. He has no hatred towards anyone. And the Lord is always equal in dealings with all. And Lord is never immoral. And if I don't understand any of Lord's behavior, then it is inconceivable. I am not able to comprehend it. That doesn't mean the Lord is at fault. Lord can never be at fault. Like some devotee dies in an accident. Immediately one gets a doubt. How can a devotee die in an accident? How can Lord be so unfair to a devotee? A devotee is giving his life to the Lord. So that means if you have not developed sufficient faith in Krishna, you will doubt Krishna. But one knows, Krishna knows what is best, and he knows why he is doing what he is doing. And ultimately, you know, it may be to wipe out the last traces of sins he has and take the devotee back to Godhead. That is why you have to read the life of Mahajanas, how Krishna treated Bali Maharaj, how Krishna treated Prahlada's father, how Krishna treated Bhishma. Yeah, that is true. Yeah, how can bomb blast happen to our devotees, and devotees have given their life to Krishna, how can Lord do this to them? That means devotees have very superficial faith. Their faith is not a very deep faith. Like for example, myself, I am a devotee now, but I should be ready to lay down my life for Krishna. If something terrible happens to me in my life, either for my mind or for my body, and I should not feel, how can Krishna do this to me? I should feel that I am such a deadly rascal that I deserve this and much more for all the sins that I have done in the past. None of us should think that I deserve great respect and great honor in front of Krishna. Actually, we always should remember that we have led sinful lives and we deserve severe punishments. And sometimes the Lord may give token punishment in a small way. Sometimes the punishment Lord gives, actually for the Lord, He sees only the soul. Eradication of a material body is not at all a very big loss. But those who are bodily conscious, they consider it like a big blow, you know. For them, leaving the body is a very serious thing. But we have already left millions of bodies which have died and gone in the past lives, isn't it? It's not a very big thing for one to lose the body. Just like, you know, getting a kind of sinful reaction, leaving the body is also one type of reaction. So, that is why I am telling that the lack of fight becomes an obstacle in our approaching Krishna. We hear knowledge, but our lack of faith in Krishna, why are we trying to convince our students right from the early days about how Krishna is not immoral, how Lord is fair? Also the faith that Krishna is the supreme, there is no one equal to Him or beyond Him, and there is no impersonal Brahman, all-pervading Brahman which is beyond Krishna as people often concoct. But these Vedas, actually we may even hear lectures, but internally, heart of hearts, we have to have this faith in our own system. Like Premius was asking now, we are living in a society, but over the years, firm faith in Krishna and firm faith in devotees, that should develop. And when that firm faith develops, then it will transform into love. Then only it's possible. When we talk of love of Krishna, it is not that, you know, you are just leading a life of running around here and there, doing this, doing that, and suddenly one day love will develop. No, love is something that gradually, the state of heart, the heart should gradually transform. It's a gradual thing, and it will keep building, and then it will manifest as pure love for Krishna. So, but initially, before the love descends in the heart, the faith should develop in the knowledge that we have acquired. So, when Devant was telling, when he's talking about chanting Hare Krishna personally, one has to remember this fact that actually Krishna, Radha and Krishna are the eternal divine couple. Because we are materially oriented, we cannot understand how this divine couple, Radha and Krishna, you know, bringing them together and dancing for them, singing for them, offering flowers to them, offering garlands to them, offering betel nuts to them, you know, making a beautiful kunj for them, making nice dresses for them and ornaments for them, singing for them. How can, you know, this sometimes doesn't cross our mind due to strong tendency for sense gratification. When you have a strong tendency for sense gratification, we cannot, this relationship with Radha Krishna cannot just enter our mind. That's why Prabhupada says that one has to endeavor to become pure in mind. Because unless the mind is detached from contemplation on sense gratification, one cannot appreciate service to the divine couple. It is just not possible. As soon as one thinks of the divine couple, immediately man-woman relationship comes to mind. The reason is because we are always keeping the mind absorbed, soaked in sense gratification. That is the problem. And we have become brahmacharis externally, wearing dress of a mendicant and wearing tilak and everything. But if we secretly keep our minds soaked in sense gratification, we will never be able to appreciate the divine couple or service to the divine couple. It is never possible. So, that's why in that verse, Manaprasada Swamyatvam, in that Prabhupada says, one should detach the mind from the contemplation on sense gratification in the world. And one should give up injuring thoughts to others and always consider welfare of others in the mind. And keeping this mood in life, when one is entering service, the faith will develop. That's why I was telling you, if you want to know what kind of lectures you should speak, you should speak in the way Prabhupada speaks. That means hear Prabhupada's lectures and speak in the way, stressing on whatever stress that Prabhupada has given in many of the things. So because he's the founder acharya for society, we should lay emphasis in those things. Of course, Prabhupada has emphasized a lot because he was preaching in different parts of the world. Prabhupada was not preaching to only one group of devotees for a long period of time. Prabhupada was going to different parts of the world and giving lectures. First we emphasize the things that Prabhupada has emphasized, and then when people become more finer, understand, we may not be talking only about the soul. And we also talk about Krishna, yeah? Actually, see, we may, how we are supposed to see, according to Radhana Swami Maharaj, he has made different projects and put different people to take care of different projects. We just see our superiors as elder brothers, like I see Shyamanand Prabhu or Govind Prabhu or Gopinath Prabhu or Devamrita Prabhu. That is our relation. All of you, your relation is with your spiritual master. That's the he is the one who links you to the parampara. But the one who is put as a caretaker, like in every project, Maharaj generally runs the projects through one person in whom he has trust. He puts somebody, and then there is a group of devotees surrounding the devotee, and then through that Maharaj sees that everyone is doing the needful to become Krishna conscious. That's what he generally does. Yeah, of course. We offer obeisances. Now somebody may say, Prabhuji, I don't feel like offering obeisances to you, like somebody told Prabhupada also. Even one Prabhupada disciple told Prabhupada, Prabhupada, just because you are the founder acharya and you are authority in ISKCON, I have to offer obeisances to you. Because I don't feel it, I better not do it. And Prabhupada said, no, you may, if you do it, you will feel it. You remember that? And Prabhupada was saying that. Now many of us, we do many things from Krishna consciousness without feeling. But we do it because it is the right thing to do. It's the correct thing to do. Like one day you are in Mangalarti, you feel so ecstatic. You know, you are going out of control. Hari bol, Hari bol, Hari bol, You are just with overflowing ecstasy. Another day in Mangalarti, your heart is dry like a desert. You don't feel any happiness. And you feel, what is this? And I am doing some robotic exercise, moving my hands and legs. You feel like a robo machine. So what should a devotee think? The reason is, our mind is always fickle. Sometimes the mind says it's a pleasurable experience. Sometimes the mind says it's a painful experience. It's a boring experience. But whether mind feels good or bad, we do it because it's the right thing to do. You understand? Like for example, like prasadam they are serving. Say they are serving rice, dal, sabji, chapati. Sometimes you get sabjis which you like very much, certain days, and you may even eat a little more. Other days you get subject which you don't like. But that's a subject prepared for everyone. Okay, you take it. You accept it. So, in spiritual life, we put aside our likes and dislikes and we tolerate, as Lord Krishna told Arjuna, Tam Stitikshasva Bharata. Now, if you are working under an authority, the authority is supposed to represent the parampara. For example, for all of us, GBC is the authority. If GBC fails in its representing the representation of Prabhupada or the parampara, then that's very dangerous. But fortunately, that's not happening. In ISKCON, they are all very wonderfully representing us. And now it will be very nice for us to work directly under the GBC, But every GBC is taking care of, you know, 20 temples or 30 temples, many of them. Because there are limited GBCs, 30-40 of them, who are running the whole of worldwide ISKCON. Then they have somebody even next to them, or some presidents, or some people like that who are taking care. So what I would suggest people is that you could see the representatives put in a temple, like the president or whatever. See, you have two roles with the president. One role is as an authority. He is authority, and he can add people to temple, he can remove people from temple, and he holds the post, so he has policies and rules, regulations, guidelines. See, that's one role you can see. Another role you can see the president is, you remove him from the post. You don't see him as the president. You see him as a person. You see him as an individual. And think of his nature, his qualities, his aspect of his following his guru and Prabhupada, and see him as like an elder brother, and relate with him in that way. So you can see, even Krishna can be seen in two roles. You can see Krishna as the source of all Vishnus, you know, as the Purushottama Lord, you know, and who is the source of Vishwarupa Darshan, you know, which he is giving, isn't it? Ananda Koti Brahmanda Nayak as the Devata Asti, you can see that. And one can also see Krishna, remove him from the post and see him as like Brajendra Nandan in Vrindavan, you know, playing with the covered boys, isn't it? You know, playing with the covered girls, you know, dealing with Mother Yashoda. So there are two different roles. Same thing with spiritual master. One can see spiritual master as a, you know, GBC, and he has a post, he holds a post, you know, he's a guru. So these are all, that's why I told you, ISKCON is a office and a home, both. So people play two roles, and both are important for the functioning of the organization. For example, if any of you say, you treat me like an elder brother, and then you go and sleep off during chanting. In home you can do such things, you know. With elder, if you have a brother, many times, you know, younger brother may be naughty, you know, isn't it? But we also have this role of official role in order to implement the policies and the procedures and that. You all understand what I'm saying? Mostly, the neophyte stage, we see the externals and we come up with conclusion. Like when you say humility, it's a very difficult thing to understand who is actually humble. Like, you know, Prabhupada is humble, but many people will not understand how Prabhupada is humble, you know. The way Prabhupada spoke, he called scientists as rascals, you know. He was, sometimes he said, get out of here, he told some professors who were actually criticizing Vedavyas. So Prabhupada was many times heavy, but Prabhupada was actually humble. So it's very difficult to exactly understand who is humble and who is not. See, humility means not anxious to be honored by others. That's one definition Prabhupada gives. Another definition he gives is humility means one considers oneself insignificant. So there were many followers of Nityananda Prabhu who were often misunderstood by others. Because the Nityananda Prabhu followers of Meenakethan Ramdas and others, you know, in their dealings, they were playful. They were misunderstood by others. They were apparently proud. Like even Krishnadas Gauraj Goswami says, if you know, anyone doesn't accept Gauranga Mahaprabhu, I'll kick them, he says. You know. So, ore muda lok, he says in one place. Oh, foolish people of the world, why didn't you surrender to the beautiful Lord Chaitanya? So, somebody may say, how can somebody who is calling somebody as a muda lok can be considered humble? But they are actually humble because they are compassionate in their heart. Like a mother sometimes may slap a child who is mischievous. So their chastisement also arises out of their deep sense of compassion. Some people externally seem to be humble, but actually they are not humble at all. So just because somebody is folding the palms and rolling on the dust on the ground, you know, doesn't mean they are very humble. Inside the heart, they are so strongly attached to their own views, their own opinions, and they will never be flexible to others. They have hardly any compassion for, they have only compassion for themselves. So it's very difficult. So you can understand who is humble, who is not, over a period of time, by associating with a person and by seeing, studying their nature carefully. But as devotees, we try to be externally also humble. Why? Because the world considers based on the superficial outlook. For example, when we talk to people, you know, we try to speak in a humble way. Why? Because that is what they will treat as humble. If you say, I am humble, but externally you don't exhibit humility, people will not believe. Because often a person doesn't look humble. People see what they, like Radhana Swami, for example, follows all the etiquettes very carefully. When he's sitting on the grass and somebody comes, he gets down, you know, he offers obeisances with folded palms and he makes them sit in the asana and then he sits and he glorifies them. Externally also he's following all these things very carefully to set an example, like an acharya. Acharya should set an example. Now he may say, okay, Chandra Maharaj, Hari Bol, come, you know. Then he may say, come and sit. Because, you know, he is his friend only. But still, why is he following the etiquettes in order to teach us? So that, you know, one should not minimize the etiquettes. Yeah. Like Premasp was asking also about the etiquettes. Now somebody may say, what is this, Rajampur? Every day, you know, what is the need of we people offering you obeisances? You know, you are anyway in the temple only, we see you every day. You know? So what is the need? Anyway, you are not our guru also, you know, you are not a spiritual master, you know, you are just like elder brother, you know. You are also, so why can't we behave freely with you? Why all this formality? Actually, if you see, there is a blend of spontaneity and formality, both. Even in relationship between Krishna and Arjuna, you will see that. We cannot compromise on either of the two. Like, you know, compromising on spontaneity and keeping only formality will simply become a set of rules and rites and rituals, external, simply official. And compromising on the formal relationship will lead to spontaneity, which is very dangerous in the long run, because we may take people very cheaply. We may not take their good instructions. Unless you respect a person, you cannot take his instructions seriously. It's not possible. Like some gurus, sometimes they are too free with their disciples. Sometimes it is very dangerous. Actually, for the guru, it's not dangerous. For the disciples, you know. Like sometimes in their dealings, it's very dangerous for the disciple. Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes dangerous. Devotees should actually consider guru like God. So I never try to artificially put up a particular show that I will get respect from everyone. I never do that. I am what I am. I am a particular type of personality and I have a relationship like this. Even with my family members or with my relatives, friends, I have a certain type of serious relationship with everyone and I behave in the same way. And of course, different people may have different natures. That's possible, yeah. But actually, eventually the relationship should develop in such a way that we don't see the authority as authority. To the degree you obey me or you bow down to me, only seeing me as an authority, that means it's a failure in relationship. In the long run, I am saying. I am not saying the new boys who are coming, you know, to the temple and those are upcoming devotees, those who are very new, for them to see the president as an authority and bow down, or to see see such a senior in that role is all right for them. But as one has passed time, one has heard several lectures, one has seen the lifestyle of a person, to respect a person, so the respect that comes in our heart should be very spontaneous, it should be very natural. Like, you know, my respect for Devanpu or for Maharaj or for seniors. Like when I see Govindpu, Gopinathpur, I feel immediately like offering obeisances. It's not that I'm doing it, you know, now this fellow has come in the front, okay. And everyone is doing, I also have to do, you see. Yeah, I never do like that. Actually, to all my seniors, not only seniors, even to my equals, when I see Gaurang Prabhu, I immediately feel like offering obeisances. Because I feel that these are people who are my well-wishers, who are my protectors, and whose influence in my life has transformed my heart. It's not only the Guru, it's the Guru along with all our God brothers. Yeah. If that is the case, then what to speak of a person who is 24 hours living with you, who has no other business in his life, who has made his sole purpose in his life as simply living with you and taking care of you, protecting you, nurturing you, nourishing you, correcting you, guiding you. He is a person who is always... Actually, I wanted Devanpu to be like that in my life. Unfortunately, it didn't happen. I wish, you know, Devamtu became president of Pune and I lived under him. Actually, it's a great boon for someone who brings you to Krishna consciousness and who is there with you lifelong, escorting you, guiding you. And if you ask me, then I would have accepted Devamtu like my own guru, as much as I accept the Diksha Guru. Yeah, I would not have any difficulty in accepting him exactly like I accept my Diksha Guru. I won't have any difficulty. Although he is my Shiksha Guru. Because he is a person who introduced me to Krishna consciousness. And now he is living with me and he is watching me. And how many years? Not 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 10 years. He is living with me only. It's a big boon. It's a very big boon. So, spontaneous respect should come. And if it doesn't come, it could be due to various reasons. Either it is due to the disqualification of the superior who is guiding you. Or it is due to our own contaminations in our heart. Like false pride or ignorance that doesn't help us to understand. Like sometimes even one may not be able to get a natural respect for one's Diksha Guru. What to speak of Shiksha Guru? Somebody has given you Diksha. Diksha means actually he is a Uddharak person. He is delivering you from this world to that world. And you may not get such a respect. Everyone is hopping up in why else our businesses. Okay. You know? Actually our heart is very stubborn many times. It is like a stone sometimes. So if we don't get things naturally, then we try to follow certain codes of conduct. Like for example, some people pass urine. You know, they may not wash their legs or hands properly because of bad habit. Cultivation of bad habit. Basically they have to change that habit. Yeah. So it should be seen like that. Of course if one has a sin, one has a fear for an authority or for a person because of his nature. Fear is always a very safer platform. Like Chanakya also says, Lalane bahavo dosha, tadane bahavo guna, tasmat putramscha shishyamscha tadiyet natu lalayet. He says that. You know this? Lalane bahavo dosha. By being very free and loose and allowing liberal behavior, lalane bahavo dosha. What is the meaning? Lot of faults will come in a person by keeping things loose. Thadane bahavo guna, he says. And by keeping discipline, the stick, then there will be many good qualities will come in a shishya. Tasmat putramscha shishyamscha thadayet, he says. So, in discipline. So, right from day one in my stay in Pune, I have been always emphasizing on many things like punctuality or, you know, not missing the morning program, or being obedient to the counselors, or living up a certain type of lifestyle, which may produce some amount of fear in the hearts of people. That fear is not a bad thing. But eventually, those people who fear in the beginning, over a period of time, as you grow, see now all of you have grown up as brahmacharis. Now you look back into your life, you know, you will be very grateful. Thank God. Otherwise, you cannot remain brahmachari. Very soon, many people have been knocked off. Mahadev is extremely powerful. So, we will be grateful for the discipline only after we become senior. Like now, I am emphasizing on people that they should write EBG quizzes, you know, and Bhagavad Gita as it is quizzes. Now, many of the preachers, they were thinking, what is the Rajashampur is too much pushing. Prabhuji, EBG quizzes, all right, only 10 questions, you know. But Bhagavad Gita as it is quiz, you know, some lessons have 50 questions, 100 questions, you know. Prabhuji, is it all right if they leave that they were asking? I was very strongly emphasizing. I told them, let them do it now. You push them a little bit. Let them do it now. And after 5 years, they will look back. They will be very grateful for what they got. And that is the meaning of Tasmat Putram Shishyam Cha Tadayet. That's the meaning of that. Yeah. Somebody had a hand up, somebody? Yeah. So we will chant the holy names and later, after, I think, what time we talk in the morning here, is that we have to remember we are sadhus, we have to give up sense gratification, and we have to develop loving attraction for Krishna. Prabhupada says renunciation is not as important as developing loving attraction for Krishna, Prabhupada says. That means first we should emphasize on developing loving attraction for Krishna, and then on renunciation. So, and we have to read Prabhupada books to that end. And like I was telling, you know, somebody gives a whole lecture, Sunday feast lecture on Sadhu Sangha, you know. And then people go back and then say, now I will do Sadhu Sangha Vasharam Babuji. Kalbola Maharaj ne lecture mein bola ki Sadhu Sangha karna chahiye. Abhi aaj se humko television kar denge ghar mein. Roj hum Vasharam Babuji ka subah mein channel mein dekhenge. So, these are all peripheral fields. That's why Prabhupada stressed directly on Krishna. That, you know, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is not impersonal. He is not immoral. He is even superior to Vishnu also. And there is no one equal to him, no one beyond him. The knowledge about Krishna and developing a firm faith in him. Through developing faith and love in the devotees. This is the main theme that I was speaking now. And that will gradually bring us to a stage where when we chant the holy names, we can do it as an offering to Krishna. It's possible. Sometimes, how many of you have experienced? In the beginning, you offered a prayer, you chanted. Now, 4 rounds, 6 rounds, 8 rounds are over. After that, you don't know what you are doing. Yeah. You have experience of this? How many of you experience? Yeah. Isn't it? It becomes like some exercise. Harikshanada, somehow or other, I have to finish it. And your hands and legs are throbbing, you know. you are not able to stand or sit or, you know, do any activity. That mind becomes terribly restless. You know, mind says, oh, I don't want to chant, but I have to chant, what to do? And you don't know, what are you doing? What is this chanting? You don't see it as an offering to Krishna. So that is why I was talking on this topic. You have to do it as an offering to Krishna. See, in every other activity, you know what you are doing. When you are eating food, you know what you are eating. You know, what is the sabji, and you want more sabji, you give more dal, you know. More chapati, a full nice concentration is there. They're eating correct, isn't it? Even in other activities also, when we do, in all the everyday activities you can see, in any department you do any activity, but the chanting is also an activity which is supposed to be done as an offering to the Lord. But after some time, the prayer which you offered in the beginning, in fact, some of the sannyasis, like Mahani Swami and all, some of them offer prayers after every round. They offer a prayer. In order to remember what I am doing, I am actually praying to Krishna. Please, Krishna, give me resignation from the material world and engage me in your service. I want to resign from the company of material world and I want to join the company of spiritual world. enough of the service to Maya. Now engage me in your service. I have suffered enough. I have learned a good lesson. What is it was? Svatantra Jeevane. Padaduka Paniyachi. Isn't it? That's what I am supposed to remember. Enough. But even after Bada Dukkha Payaji, still we don't remember. No? We don't ask him to engage in his service. Haranam Prabhu Ki.